Chapter 10, in which Twinkle takes to the roof. In the night, a worrying thought struck Charmaine. If you could travel in time in Great Uncle William's house, what was to stop her arriving in the royal mansion 10 years ago to find that the king was not expecting her? Or 10 years in the future to find that Prince Ludovic was ruling now? It was enough to make her decide to walk to the mansion in the usual way. So, the next morning, Charmaine set off along the road with Waif pattering behind her until they came by the cliff where the Lubbock's meadow was, when Waif became so breathless and pathetic that Charmaine picked her up. As usual, Charmaine thought. I feel like a proper grown-up working girl, she added to herself as she strode toward town with Waif happily trying to lick her chin. It had rained in the night again, but now it was one of those mornings of pale blue sky and huge white clouds. The mountains were silky blues and greens, and in the town the sun glittered off wet cobbles and flared on the river. Charmaine felt very contented. She was really looking forward to a day of sorting papers and chatting with the king. As she crossed Royal Square, the sun glared so off the golden roof of the royal mansion that Charmaine was forced to look down at the cobbles. Waif blinked and ducked and then jumped as a loud squealing sound came from the mansion. Look at me! Look at me! Charmaine looked, found her eyes full of tears from the dazzle and looked again under a hand spared from Waif. The child, Twinkle, was sitting astride the golden roof, fully 100 feet in the air, waving merrily to her. He almost overbalanced doing it. At the sight, Charmaine forgot all the unkind thoughts she had had about children yesterday. She dumped Waif on the cobbles and ran for the mansion door, where she clattered at the great knocker and rang the bell furiously. "That little boy!" she gasped at Sim when he slowly and creakily opened the door. "Twinkle, he's sitting on the roof. Someone has to get him down."
"Is that so?" said Sim.
He tottered out onto the steps. Charmaine had to wait while he tottered to a place where he could see the roof and craned shakily upward.
"Indeed he is, miss," he agreed. "Little demon, he'll fall. That roof is as slippery as ice."
Charmaine was jigging with impatience by then. "Send someone to fetch him in, quickly."
"I don't know who," Sim said slowly. "Nobody much at this mansion climbs too well. I could send Jamal, I suppose, but with only the one eye, his balance is not too good."
Waif was prancing about, yapping to be carried up the steps. Charmaine ignored her. "Then send me," she said. "Just tell me how to get there, now, before he slides off sideways."
"Good notion," Sim agreed. "You take the stairs at the end of the hall, miss, and keep on going up. Last flight's wooden, and you'll find a small door."
Charmaine waited for no more. Leaving Waif to fend for herself, she raced off down the damp stone corridor until she came to the lobby with the stone stairs. There she began to climb for dear life, with her glasses bouncing on her chest and her footsteps ringing round the walls. Up she went, 2 long flights, her mind filled with horrible thoughts of a small body plummeting down and hitting the cobbles with, well, a splash, just about where she had left Waif. Panting hard, she hurried up a 3rd, narrower flight. It seemed endless. Then she came to wooden stairs and clattered up those, almost out of breath. They seemed endless, too. At last, she came to a small wooden door. Praying she was still in time, Charmaine flung open the door onto a blaze of sunlight and gold.
"I thought you were never coming," Twinkle said from the middle of the roof.
He was wearing a pale blue velvet suit, and his golden hair blazed as bright as the roof. He seemed perfectly calm, more like a strayed angel than a small boy in trouble on a roof.
"Are you very frightened?" Charmaine panted anxiously. "Hold on very tight and don't move, and I'll crawl out and get you."
"Please do that," Twinkle said politely.
He doesn't know the danger he's in, Charmaine thought. I shall have to keep very calm. Very cautiously,
She climbed out through the wooden door and manoeuvred until she was sitting astride the roof like Twinkle. It was highly uncomfortable. Charmaine did not know which was worse, the fact that the tin tiles were hot, wet, sharp and slippery, or the way the roof seemed to be cutting her in two. When she snatched a sideways look at Royal Square, far, far below, she had to remind herself very seriously that she had worked a spell only 3 days ago that had saved her from the Lubbock and proved that she could fly. She might be able to grab Twinkle round his waist and float down with him. Here she realized that Twinkle was moving backward away from her as she worked her way toward him. "Stop that," she said. "Don't you know how dangerous this is?"
"Of course I do," Twinkle retorted. "Heights scare me silly, but this is the only place where I can talk to you without anyone overhearing. Just get yourself to the middle of the roof where I don't have to shout, and be quick. Princess Hilda has hired a nursemaid for Morgan and me. The wretched girl will be along any minute now."
This sounded so grown up that Charmaine blinked and stared at him. Twinkle smiled blindingly back, all big blue eyes and enchanting rosy lips.
"Are you an infant genius or something?" she asked him. "Well, I am now," Twinkle said. "When I was really 6 years old, I was about average, I think, with a strong gift for magic, of course. Move along, can't you?"
"I'm trying," Charmaine set herself to shunting along the roof until she was only a foot or so away from the child.
"So what are we supposed to be talking about?" she snapped into his face. "Withered Norland Firth," Twinkle said. "They tell me you know him."
"Not really," Charmaine said. "He's my great-aunt by marriage's great-uncle. I'm keeping house for him while he's ill." She did not feel like mentioning Peter.
"And what is his house like?" Twinkle asked. He added chattily, "I live in a moving castle myself. Does Norland's house move?"
"No," said Charmaine, "but there's a door in the middle that takes you to about 100 different rooms. They say Wizard Mellicott made it."
"Ah, Mellicott," Twinkle piped. He seemed very pleased. "Then I'll probably need to come and see it, whatever Castle Firth is. Is that all right?"
"I suppose so," Charmaine said.
"Why?"
"Because," Twinkle explained, "Sophie, Calcifer, and I have been hired to find out what became of the gold in the king's treasury. At least, we think that's what they're wanting, but they're not being very clear. Half the time they seem to be saying that what they've lost is something called the elf gift, and nobody knows what this elf gift is. And the princess has asked Sophie to find out what keeps happening to the money from the taxes, and that seems to be something different again. They've sold a lot of pictures and other things, and they're still as poor as church mice. You must have noticed."
Charmaine nodded.
"I noticed." "Couldn't they ask for more taxes?"
"Or sell some of their library?" Twinkle suggested.
He shrugged. This made him sway about so precariously that Charmaine shut her eyes.
"Calcifer nearly got ordered to leave last night when he suggested selling some books. And as for taxes, the king says High Norland people are well off and contented, and any extra tax money would probably just disappear too, though that's no good. What I want you to do..."
There was a shout down in the distance. Charmaine opened her eyes and looked sideways. Quite a number of people had gathered in the square, all shading their eyes and pointing to the roof.
"Hurry up," she said. "They'll be calling out the fire brigade any minute now."
"Do they have one?" Twinkle asked.
"They're civilized, you are here."
He smiled another of his blazing smiles.
"What we need you to do..."
"Are you two quite happy out here?" a voice asked close behind Charmaine. It was so near and so sudden that Charmaine jumped and all but overbalanced.
"What is Sophie?" Twinkle said urgently. "You nearly had her off then."
"That just goes to show what a harebrained scheme this was, even for you," Sophie said. By the sound, she was leaning out of the wooden door, but Charmaine did not dare turn round to look.
"Have you done the magic I gave you?"
Twinkle asked, leaning sideways to talk round Charmaine.
"Yes, I have," Sophie said.
"Everyone's running around the mansion, fussing. Carcifer's trying to stop that silly nursemaid having hysterics, and someone outside has just called the firemen in. I managed to slip into the library with your spell in the confusion. Satisfied?"
"Perfectly."
Twinkle gave another angelic smile.
"You see how cunning my plan was now?"
He leaned toward Charmaine.
"What I've done," he said to her, "is to cast a spell that makes every book or piece of paper that has the slightest bearing on the king's problems light up with a light that only you can see. When you spot a lighted one, I want you to make a note of which it is and what it says. Secretly, of course. Something is definitely wrong here, and we don't want anyone to know what you're doing, in case it gets to the person causing the trouble. Can you do that for us?"
"I suppose so," said Charmaine. It sounded easy enough, although she did not like the idea of keeping secrets from the king.
"When do you want my notes?"
"Tonight, please, before that princely heir gets here," Sophie said from behind Charmaine. "There's no need to get him mixed up in this, and we're very grateful, and it truly is important. It's the reason why we're here. Now, for goodness sake, come inside, both of you, before they start putting up ladders."
"All right," Twinkle piped. "Here we go. I may arrive in 2 halves, mind you."
"Serve you right," said Sophie. The roof started to buck and ripple under Charmaine. She nearly screamed, but she clung on with both hands, reminding herself that she really could fly, couldn't she? And the roof jiggled and rippled her backward toward the way she'd come out, while in front of her, Twinkle jiggled onward too. In moments, Charmaine felt Sophie take hold of her under her armpits and lug her backward, with a bit of a scramble, inside the royal mansion again. Sophie then leaned out and seized Twinkle and dumped him down beside Charmaine. Twinkle looked soulfully up at Charmaine.
"Back to infancy again," he said, sighing. "You won't give me away, will you?"
"Oh, cut out the nonsense," Sophie said. "Charmaine's all right," she said to Charmaine. "His name's Howl, really, and he's enjoying himself quite disgustingly much, having his second childhood.
Come along, my little man."
She swept Twinkle up under one arm and carried him away down the stairs. There was a lot of kicking and screaming. Charmaine followed them, shaking her head. On the main landing halfway down, everyone in the mansion seemed to be gathered, including a number of people Charmaine had not seen before, with Calcifer bobbing this way and that among them. Even the king was there, carrying waif in an absent-minded way. Princess Hilda pushed aside a fat young woman who was holding Morgan and sobbing, and shook Charmaine's hand.
"My dear Miss Charming, thank you so very much. We were in such a panic. Sim, go and tell the firemen we don't need the ladders, and we certainly don't need the hoses."
Charmaine could hardly hear her. Waif had seen Charmaine, and she promptly leapt from the king's arms, yapping with hysterical relief that Charmaine was safe. From somewhere in the background, Jamal's dog answered with mournful howlings. The fat nursemaid went,
"Sniff!"
Morgan bellowed,
"Oof! Oof!"
And everyone else jabbered. In the distance, Twinkle was yelling,
"I am not naughty. I was very frightened, I tell you."
Charmaine cut down some of the noise by scooping Waif up. Princess Hilda silenced most of the rest by clapping her hands and saying,
"Back to work, everyone. Nancy, take Morgan away before he deafens us all, and make it very clear to him that he is not going out on the roof too. Sophie, dear, can you shut Twinkle up?"
Everyone moved away. Twinkle went,
"I am not a naughty,"
and then stopped, as if a hand had been clapped across his mouth. In next to no time, Charmaine found herself walking down the rest of the stairs with the king on the way to the library, with Waif ecstatically trying to lick her chin.
"It takes me right back," the king remarked. "I got out on the roof several times when I was a boy. Never failed to cause a silly panic. Firemen nearly hosed me off once by mistake. Boys will be boys, my dear. Are you ready to get down to work, or will you want to sit and recover a bit?
No, I'm fine, Charmaine assured him. She felt completely at home today as she settled into her seat in the library, surrounded by the smell of old books, with Waif toasting her tummy at the brazier, and the king sitting opposite, investigating a ragged pile of old diaries. So peaceful was it that Charmaine all but forgot about Twinkle's spell. She became immersed in peeling apart a damp pile of old letters. They were all from a long-ago prince who was breeding horses and wanted his mother to coax more money out of the king. The prince was just feelingly describing the beauties of the new foal his best mare had given birth to, when Charmaine looked up to see the fire demon flickering slowly this way and that around the library. The king looked up too.
"Good morning, Calcifer," he said courteously. "Is there something you need?"
"Just exploring,"
Calcifer answered in his small, crackling voice.
"I understand now why you might not want to sell these books."
"Indeed," said the king. "Tell me, do fire demons read much?"
"Not generally," Calcifer replied. "Sophie reads to me quite often. I like the kind of story with puzzles in, where you have to guess who did the murder. Have you any of those in here?"
"Probably not," said the king. "But my daughter is partial to murder mysteries, too. Perhaps you should ask her."
"Thank you, I will,"
Calcifer said, and vanished. The king shook his head and went back to his diaries. And as if Calcifer had given Twinkle's spell a jog, Charmaine instantly noticed that the diary the king was flipping through was glowing a faint pale green. So was the next thing in her own pile, which was a rather squashed scroll done up with tarnished golden tape. Charmaine took a large breath and asked, "Anything interesting in that diary, sire?"
"Well," said the king, "it's rather nasty, really. This is the diary of one of my great-grandmother's ladies-in-waiting, full of gossip. Just now, she's dreadfully shocked because the king's sister died giving birth to a son, and the midwife seems to have killed the baby. Said it was purple, and it frightened her. They're going to put the poor silly soul on trial for murder."
Charmaine's mind flew to herself and Peter looking up Lubbock in Great Uncle William's encyclopedia. She said, "I suppose she thought the baby was a Lubbockin."
"Yeah, very superstitious and ignorant," the king said. "No one believes in Lubbockins these days."
He went back to reading. Charmaine wondered whether to say that that long-ago midwife may have been quite right. Lubbocks existed. Why not Lubbockins, too? But she was sure the king would not believe her, and she scribbled a note about it instead. Then she picked up the squashed scroll. But before she unrolled it, it occurred to her to look along the row of boxes where she had put the papers she had already read, in case any of them glowed, too. Only one did, quite faintly. When Charmaine pulled it out, she found it was the bill from Wizard Mellicott for making the roof look like gold. This was puzzling, but Charmaine made a note about that too, before she finally undid the tarnished gold tape and spread the scroll out. It was a family tree of the kings of High Norland, rather scribbly and hasty, as if it was only a plan for a much more careful copy. Charmaine had trouble reading it. It was full of crossings out and little arrows leading to scribbled additions and lopsided circles with notes inside them. "Sire," she said, "can you explain this to me?"
"Let's see."
The king took the scroll and spread it out on the table.
"Ah," he said, "we've got the fair copy of this hanging in the throne room. I haven't properly looked at it for years, but I know it's much plainer than this family tree, just names of rulers and who they married and so on. This one seems to have notes on it, written by several different people by the looks of it. See, here's my ancestor, Adolphus the First. The note beside him is in really old writing. It says, raised walls to the town by virtue of the elf gift. Not much sign of those walls nowadays, is there?
But they say that Embankment Street down beside the river is part of the old walls.
Excuse me, sire, Charmaine interrupted, but what is the elf gift?
No idea, my dear, the king said. I wish I knew. It was said to bring prosperity and protection to the kingdom, whatever it was, but it seems to have vanished long ago. This is fascinating.
The king ran his large finger across to one note after another.
Here, beside my ancestor's wife, it says, was elf woman so called. They always told me that Queen Matilda was only half elf, but here is her son, Hans Nicholas, labelled as elf child. So maybe that's why he never got to be king. Nobody really trusts elves. Great mistake, in my opinion. They crowned Hans Nicholas's son instead, a very boring person called Adolphus II, who never did anything much. He's the one king on this scroll who doesn't have a note beside him, tells you something. But his son, here he is, Hans Peter Adolphus, he has a note that says, reaffirm the safety of the realm in partnership with the elf gift, whatever that means. My dear, this is so interesting. Would you do me the favour of making a good readable copy of all these people's names and the notes beside them? You can miss out cousins and things if they don't have notes. Would you mind very much?
Not at all, sire, Charmaine said. She had been wondering how she could write all this down secretly for Sophie and Twinkle, and this was how. She spent the rest of that day making two copies of the scroll. One was a muddly first draft, where she was constantly having to ask the king about this note or that one, and the second copy was in her best writing for the king himself. She became as interested as the king was. Why did Hans Peter III's nephew take to banditry in the hills? What made Queen Gertrude a witch to be feared? And why was her daughter, Princess Isola, labelled Blue Man Lover? The king could not answer those questions, but he said he had a good idea why Prince Nicholas Adolphus was labelled Drunkard.
Had Charmaine looked at where it said the prince's father, Peter Hans IV, was called a dark tyrant and a wizard besides? Some of my ancestors were not nice people, he said. I bet this one bullied poor Nicholas horribly. They tell me it can be like that when elf blood goes sour, but I think it's just people, really.
Quite late in the day, when Charmaine was down near the bottom of the scroll, where nearly every ruler seemed to be called Adolphus, or Adolphus Nicholas, or Ludovic Adolphus, she was fascinated to come upon a Princess Moina, who married a great lord of Strangia but died giving birth to a loathsome lubberkin. Charmaine was sure Moina was the one in the lady-in-waiting's diary. It looked as if someone had believed the midwife's story. She decided not to mention this to the king. Three lines farther down, she came upon the king himself, much lost among his books, and Princess Hilda refused marriage with a king, three lords, and a wizard. They were rather squeezed to one side to make room for the descendants of the king's uncle, Nicholas Peter, who seemed to have had a great many children. The children's children filled the whole bottom row. How on earth do they remember who is which? Charmaine wondered. Half the girls were called Matilda, and the other half Isola, while the boys were mostly Hans or Hans Adolphus. You could only tell them apart by the tiny scribbled notes calling one Hans a great lout drowned, and another murdered by accident, and yet another died abroad. The girls were worse. One Matilda was a tedious, proud girl, another to be feared like Queen Gertrude, and a third of no good nature. The Isolas were all either poisoned or of evil ways.
The king's heir, Ludovic Nicholas, stood out from what Charmaine began to think was a truly dreadful family by having no note beside him at all, like the dull Adolphus of long ago. She wrote it all out, names, notes, and all. By the end of the afternoon, her right forefinger was quite numb and blue with ink.
"Thank you, my dear,"
the king said, as Charmaine handed him her good copy. He started reading through it so eagerly that Charmaine was easily able to gather up her scribbly copy and her other notes and cram them into her pockets without the king seeing. As she stood up, the king looked up to say,
"I hope you will forgive me, my dear. I shall not be needing you for the next 2 days. The princess insists that I come out of the library and play host to young Prince Ludovic this weekend. She is not at her best with male visitors, you know, but I shall see you again on Monday, I hope."
"Yes, of course," Charmaine said. She collected Waif, who came pottering toward her from the kitchen, and set off toward the front door, wondering what to do with her copy of the scroll. She was not sure she trusted Twinkle. Could you trust someone who looked like a little boy and obviously wasn't quite? And then there's what Peter said Great Uncle William said about fire demons. Can you trust someone that dangerous? She thought unhappily as she went. She found herself face to face with Sophie. "How did it go? Did you find anything?" Sophie asked, smiling at her. It was such a friendly smile that Charmaine decided she could trust Sophie anyway. She hoped. "I got some things," she said, pulling papers out of her pockets. Sophie took them even more eagerly and gratefully than the king had taken his good copy. "Marvellous," she said. "These should at least give us a clue. We're really in the dark at the moment. Twinkle, says divining spells just don't seem to work here. And that's odd, because I don't think either the king or the princess do magic, do you? Enough to block a divining spell, I mean."
"No," Charmaine said, "but a lot of their ancestors did, and there's more to the king than meets your eye."
"You're right," said Sophie. "Are you able to stay and go through these notes with us?"
"Ask me things on Monday," Charmaine told her. "I have to go and see my father before his bakery closes."